I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Hey, man, don't touch the switch.
I'm going to touch the switch.
No, man, I don't think you should.
Oh, I'm going to.
I don't think so, man.
I flipped the switch. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Binary Gamer, where we're going to learn some stuff about the things that we love, which is video games. So I decided to start out the show, not just this episode, but the show proper, the podcast, the series, if you will, with something that I think is kind of a big deal. So E3 is coming on. It is the 2nd of July, 2016. So E3 has come and gone. Many things have been revealed. We've seen the new God of War, which looks amazing. We've seen a lot of new games come out. Some old ones get brought back to the fore. And some that we never thought would actually come to pass, like The Last Guardian actually getting a release date. So I guess we'll see how that goes. But one of the things I think stole the show, undeniably, is the announcement and all of the trailers and everything, all the hype, if you will, for The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Now, personally, I am excited. I am extremely excited for The Legend of Zelda. And the main reason why is because that the series and those games hold a very special place in my heart, in a lot of people's hearts. And so I thought that a good way to kick off this brand new awesome podcast that I have going here is by teaching you something about The Legend of Zelda. So that's where we're going to start. So this week is history, development history. We're going to go into the development history of the first Legend of Zelda game, the innovation, the ideas, inspirations, things like that. Touch on some other points in a few other games and so on and so forth. And then we're going to continue on throughout the month of July, talking more about The Legend of Zelda. Then we're going to get into the fun stuff like lore, things like that. So let's go ahead and kick this off. So where does this story begin? It's pretty simple, actually. The story, kind of the same thing, begins the August 22nd, 1987. That's when The Legend of Zelda freaking finally gets released in the United States and everybody loses their minds. So what made this game so special? Well, it was a concept that had not been used in video games previous. You have the very first example of a open world dynamic in a game. And on a system that now is so antiquated, the Nintendo Entertainment System. But at the time, the NES hadn't been tested, really. You hadn't seen the full push to the limits with its power, its processing abilities, the capability of a cartridge. And so The Legend of Zelda really took the NES to task when it came to what is it capable of. So real quick, we're going to go over the long list of games in the long, long development cycle that is The Legend of Zelda. And then we're going to take it from there. So the first game, The Legend of Zelda, the OG, if you will, released 1987. Okay, no big deal. I was 2 at the time. Think about that. I'm 30 years old right now. That game is 28 years old. That game should have a mortgage and 2 kids. Yeesh. All right, so then Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, 1988 for the NES. Awesome. Was not my favorite game by any stretch of the imagination. Very, very different dynamic from the first Legend of Zelda, because now it's a side scroller and you're not really so much exploring, looking around for other dungeons. You're just kind of following along through the different levels. Had a lot more akin to Mario than it did to the first game. So then later on down the line, the Super Nintendo comes out, blows everybody's brains away. Not literally, but you know what I mean. And A Link to the Past comes out in 1991. Now, Link to the Past is personally my favorite Legend of Zelda. Main reason why is because it was my first Legend of Zelda game. So I had owned a NES back in the day when I was a kid, but I didn't have a lot of games for it. It was actually my grandfather's system. And I would rent video games and stuff like that, but I never really got to touch on the first Legend of Zelda game until later on down the line. Then once I played Link to the Past, I was like, oh man, there's more games in that this little dude named Link is involved in. I should go and check these games out. And I did, and grew a almost unhealthy love and admiration for the first game. But Link to the Past, that's still the one that has my heart, because the game was just so good. It did so many things right. The perspective was good. It was just shy of isometric. Not really the full-on top-down, like, your camera's up here, and your player's down here, and he's moving around, and doing. There's none of that, but it was the tilted side perspective, so you had a much greater sense of the scale of the world. Like, you could see where a ledge was, or, like, if there was a cliff, obviously there's a cliff there, but, like, you could see, like, where there was a rise, and you would come up on a ridge or a ledge. It was really good stuff. And then the story was just gripping, because all of a sudden it's like you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a storm and your uncle's like, bro, I gotta go and I gotta go do my nightly duty. And then, of course, against his wishes, because that's what heroes do, you follow him out into the storm and then you end up trying to rescue the princess and stuff happens. I'm not going to ruin a game for you. Go out and play it. It's amazing. But that game did so many things right. Also was the first one to introduce a second world, if you will, the jump between the worlds by introducing the Dark World about midway through the game. So after that, we have Link's Awakening, 1993 for the Game Boy. Really good game. I didn't really get to touch on it until later on. A lot of these games I didn't really get a chance to get my hands on when they first came out, but I did play through Link's Awakening actually at my cousin's behest. He had a Game Boy and had got the game, talked nothing but amazing things about it, and was just like, bro, you need to try this game out. So then, after a little while of him pestering me and I finally caved in, I went and played it, and it was amazing. One of the first, well, the first game to not take place in Hyrule. Definitely go out and play. Go grab yourself a Game Boy. I'm not saying I am promoting piracy, but there are emulators upon emulators out there. Find a way, people. So then after that, we make the big jump. 1998, the N64, Ocarina of Time. The very first fully 3D Legend of Zelda game. To say that this game was a jump is an understatement. This game was a quantum leap in not only storytelling in video games, but also in placing a sense of scope into the environment. Like, Hyrule was huge. It, like, when you look at the map, you're like, I can't go all over that. It's ginormous. And then, of course, Nintendo was smart, and they're like, nah, man, we'll give you a horse partway through the game. You'll be fine. But that game, man, just blew your mind the first time you leave the forest and you walk out the Hyrule Field, and you're like, this place is huge. Granted, now it's dwarfed by games like Skyrim or The Witcher 3. I mean, really, any greenlit survival game on Steam is 1,000 times bigger than Hyrule Field. But at the time, back in 98, when you slapped that cartridge in and you got it going, man, just... Anyway, I digress. So then in 2000, we have Majora's Mask. A lot of people, this is their favorite Legend of Zelda game. Me, personally, didn't care for it. I will let the rage simmer there. You can send me your angry emails later on. So 2001, the GBA gets Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages. There was originally supposed to be a third game in this series, this mini-series of games. It was supposed to be Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages, and then Oracle of Time. Never ended up coming out with Oracle of Time, so it kind of cuts itself short, but it's still in the timeline of The Legend of Zelda. But yeah, I mean, all good games in their own right. Didn't feature Ganon as a antagonist, which I thought was odd, but still good games all in all. So then 2002 on the GameCube, you get Wind Waker. Cel-shaded, everyone's like, ah, oh, man, it's so kiddy and cartoony, I don't like it at all. No, This game's amazing. So this game gave you the same sense of scope that you got from Ocarina of Time when you went out to Hyrule Field by placing you on a boat and being like, yo, dude, you got all this ocean. Freaking figure it out. And it was amazing. The story in there was really cool, too, because the whole time you're like, is this Hyrule? Is it not? I don't know. And then you get the Triforce, and then you go underwater, and you're like, oh, crap, there's Hyrule. I've been floating around this whole time. So then after that, the Four Sword Adventure on the GameCube, I honestly have never played it. So I'm going to not give you any kind of BS opinion. Never played it. The Minish Cap comes out in 2005 on the Game Boy Advance. So, funny thing, this is actually my daughter's first Legend of Zelda game. And she loves it. She thinks that the little cap, little bird guy on your hat is hilarious. I haven't really played it much. I've watched her play it. She likes it, and she's actually pretty good at it, too. It's definitely heartwarming as a father to see your kid really dive into a Legend of Zelda game. And you're like, oh my god, she's getting these puzzles. This is amazing. So, yes, definitely, that one definitely scores points with me. So then in 2006, we get Twilight Princess on the Wii. And then December of 2006, it comes out on the GameCube. So I've played Twilight Princess on the Wii. Never played it on the GameCube. From my understanding, the GameCube version of the game is superior. I'm not going to place judgment on the game strictly because I never played the GameCube version. What I played on the Wii, though, I didn't really care for because motion controls are not really my thing, but to each his own. I did like the story, though. Having a much more mature Legend of Zelda story was kind of refreshing after so many different games of, it's kind of kiddie. They're all coming-of-age stories when it really comes down to it, but this one was very much a darker, more, I don't want to say bleak, but like a darker, more adult-themed game. Pretty cool. Phantom Hourglass comes out in 2007 on the DS. Never played it. Not going to give my opinion. Spirit Tracks, 2009 on the DS. Never played it. Not going to give you my opinion. Skyward Sword, 2011 on the Wii. So, never played this one either. From what I have seen of the game, though, it kind of reminds me of a more light-hearted Twilight Princess. Didn't really care for the art style as much, but still, from what I've seen, kind of runs in that same vein. I may be wrong. I don't know. Link Between Worlds, 2013 on the 3DS. Now, let me tell you something. This game got it right. So, again, being a fan of Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds just kind of made sense as a game I was going to play because it takes place in the same universe or in the same rough timeline. They're all in the same timeline, but like this only happens like I think 100 years apart. And Hyrule, as you knew it in Link to the Past, has changed. The Dark World is very different. So it's cool because it adds a new landscape, but it's still a familiar landscape. So I liked it a lot. It's very nice. Hyrule Warriors 2014 on the Wii U. Never played it because I don't like Dynasty Warriors. Not my jam. Just wasn't my thing. And then finally, 2017, we should be having Breath of the Wild on the Wii U / NX. Do we know what the NX is? Not really. Do I know what the Wii U is? Yes, because I own one. I'm going to play it regardless of what system it comes out on. If you don't know anything about this game yet, do yourself a favor. Pause this podcast. Go on YouTube. Pull up another tab if you're watching this on YouTube. Go and check out all the E3 coverage of Breath of the Wild. It is going to blow your mind. It's not Zelda meets Skyrim. It's close, but it is definitely a departure that is long overdue from the original formula. So once again, go check it out. I highly recommend it. And that is, oddly enough, all the games. Now, if we don't count, of course, Triforce Heroes, which is more of a multiplayer game, not really counting on this list. And then Link's Crossbow Training, I'm not going to count because no. Just no. Okay, moving on. All right, so the series was created and directed by Shigeru Miyamoto. Now, if you don't know who this guy is, you should. He's a big deal at Nintendo. Sort of the guy that created Super Mario Brothers, also Star Fox, Donkey Kong, the F-Zero games. This guy has cred when it comes to the digital frontier. A lot of the first game is inspired by his childhood. He was the kind of kid that would go out and just get himself lost in the woods. Not in the literal sense, of course, he didn't end up coming home, but he would just go and explore, just go hiking. No map, no compass, just go out there and just see what there was. And in interviews and other things, he has been cited as saying that, a lot of the time when he would go out on these hikes, these little adventures off into the countryside, he would just had this sense of wonder in like all these things he would find. And, you know, there were times like he'd stumble upon a lake and be like, I had no idea this was here. This is amazing. And just go and just have an amazing time just discovering things. And so that sense of wonder and discovery, he translated over into the first game. And that's why there's no real map. There's no real direction. You just know you got to find the princess and save her from Ganon. And I mean, eventually you find your way to the cave. The old man gives you the sword because it's dangerous to go alone. And that's where it starts. No one's holding your hand. It's just go. Go be a hero. It's awesome. So one of the main stories that he likes to impart when people ask him about this is that one time he went exploring and he found a cave. And he went into the cave with nothing more than just a lamp. A single oil-burning lantern. And went in and checked the whole thing out and just had this moment of just like look at the things you can discover if you're just willing to go out there. Personally, I like to think that he found a really cool stick in there and kind of played it off as a sword, and that's where like the real spark of genius came from, but I could be wrong. All right, so then later on, as they're going through the development cycle, he's trying to figure out names, trying to figure out personalities for these characters. Now, granted, the Ness wasn't exactly a playground for expression when it came to your characters. Everything's 8-bit. They're little sprites. Link is literally, I want to say, 6 bits tall. Maybe. No, it's probably 5, actually. He's tiny. He's itty-bitty. So, can't really get a whole lot of expression going on there, but you can still give them personality. I mean, see, now, kids, back in the day, games came with instruction manuals, and instruction manuals would be illustrated. So, even though the character on the screen looked nothing like the guy in the manual, you could kind of put the two together to make a face in your mind. And it also helped to impart personality for the character. So, one of the interesting facts that I think is really cool is the fact that the origin of the names, and a lot of their personalities too, but Zelda's name comes from Zelda Fitzgerald, who, if you didn't know, is the wife of the American author F. Scott Fitzgerald, the dude that wrote like The Great Gatsby and a whole bunch of other really awesome books. So mostly it was just the name. Personality-wise, Zelda is just meant to be this astute, pure lady of royalty that more often than not ends up being a damsel in distress and is the vessel of the Triforce of Wisdom. So that's her role. He took the name strictly because he thought that it sounded pretty and elegant, and that's what princesses are supposed to be, pretty and elegant. And so that's how Zelda got her name. Now Link, on the other hand, Link is the avatar for the player. He's the guy that you embody when you're going through and saving the world and the princess and defeating Ganon and all the good stuff. Oddly enough, inspired by Peter Pan, green tunic and all, minus the cap. I like Link's cap better anyway, because that red feather thing just looks dumb to me. I don't know. Never my favorite Disney movie, but I digress. So Link is inspired by a boy that never ages. Link is this eternal hero, constantly reborn throughout the games, essentially the same soul in a different body, moving on to fulfill the same mission of going through and saving the princess and regaining the Triforce and then eventually defeating Ganon. Now the funny thing is, like, when you say it like that, it sounds so cookie cutter and it sounds boring, but what they've done with each of these games is they've thrown some type of dynamic into it that makes it compelling. It's all the same high fantasy story, but it is made fresh and new again, sometimes by the environment, sometimes by the way the story is told, but most of the time it's done through the experience that you have as the player. And I think that's one of the reasons why it works. It really is a shame though, being inspired by Peter Pan, that he can't fly. Like, imagine the possibilities, man. Like a flying Link. You don't need no loft wing. You don't need no freaking wing boots. I can just, and I'm up there. Totally breaks the game. The hookshot becomes useless. Why? Anyway, so the setting and the story, it's as high fantasy as it comes. We're all aware of that. I mean, moblins look a lot like goblins. They sound a lot like goblins too. There are fairies that assist you on a pretty regular basis if you know where to look, and even go so far as to be your own personal Jiminy Cricket. I still get shudders sometime when I hear, hey, listen. Like, nah, damn you, Navi. And there's always some type of fabled blade sword. It's always the Master Sword that is the key to banishing all evil. The Master Sword is essentially the primary, like, get away bad guy stick. And that's awesome, because it's always good to have some type of object that you're shooting for in order to get your real goal, which is to obviously save the world, defeat the bad guy, all that jazz. As parts, the themes and the setting aren't very special. They're pretty much the hero's journey over and over again. But the formula works, obviously. It worked for George Lucas. I mean, Star Wars is the hero's journey from front to back. If you start at A New Hope, end at the last scene of Jedi, It's the hero's journey, 100%. And that's fine, because it works. The formula is tested and proven, so why not apply it to The Legend of Zelda? It works. I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it. That's why it's pretty awesome. Don't reinvent the wheel, just keep it rolling. So the journey wasn't just described by Miyamoto, but a lot of the story is credited to Takashi Tezuka. And the story is really awesome because it takes the player and puts them into the avatar of Link. You are the hero. And it makes the experience more memorable. If the game didn't have a decent story, you'd forget about it later on. And when another game came out, you'd be like, man, that's all right, but I don't care. The story's what sticks with you. And that's what makes it great, because Tezuka made the story so compelling that you couldn't help but become interested, and you wanted more. And so when more games came out, people played them. I played them. I've played almost all of them. I mean, it really is a testament to the writing and to the collaboration between Miyamoto and Tezuka as well, that such a vanilla concept can still stay fresh later on through generations of people. So kudos to them for that. And if you really think about it, like, the innovation wasn't just strictly reserved for the game's story or the feel of it. So Koji Kondo, who is one of the most famous video game composers in history, is responsible for one of the most memorable and catchy video game themes of all time. If I started humming it right now, you would finish it. You couldn't help it, because you know it in your head. You do. That's all right. I'm not going to sing it right now. I want to, but I'm not going to. The score of the series is one of the most wonderful and whimsical things that you've ever heard in your entire life. If you go and... yeah, you can look it up on you can look it up on YouTube. You can find it on iTunes. I'm pretty sure you can find it just about anywhere you can get music. You can find the main theme to The Legend of Zelda, and you can listen to it in 1,000 variations. Whether it's heavy metal, symphony, which I highly recommend, by the way. Symphony of the Goddess was amazing. I've heard it on violins. I've heard it on fiddles. I heard it on a banjo once. It's a universal theme for a heroic story, for a journey of epic proportions. And it really is a testament to Koji Kondo that he made a score that fit so well, and not only fit, but uplifted the story to where you don't just remember the characters, you don't just remember the setting, you don't just remember, you know, obviously the overall plot, but you remember what things sounded like in different places. Like, I could tell you, like, if you played me a song right now, I could definitely place the game, and I could probably place which dungeon you're in. Just saying. It's in there. It's an earworm. It gets in there and just doesn't let go. And that's fine, because I love it. So, more power to him. Koji Kondo, good job, bro. I mean, I could really talk for hours about the music to A Link to the Past, but I'm not going to right now. All right, so then let's get into, like, the real technical stuff. The stuff that made it not only unique from a storytelling perspective, but the stuff that made it unique on a technical perspective. So, of course, you're looking at the very first open world game. If you really break it down to the base roots of what an open world game is, this is it. You're a hero, you start out in a place, and then you have a goal, and how you get there is up to you. There's no set order in the original Legend of Zelda game. You can go to any of the dungeons in any order. Granted, it's harder, because if you don't go to certain dungeons before certain other ones, you don't have certain items, and you can't move on further. So, the open world aspect, while giving you loose freedom, it still gives birth to the concept of the open world formula. And that's what's most important here, is the fact that, I mean, they're there first. They're there first on a lot of things. So the other thing that they're there first on is the very first save state. So think about it. When you play Super Mario Brothers for the NES, you start in World 1-1. You don't have a choice. You start going through, and you're playing, and say you're having a magnificent run. You're blazing through it. You decide you're not going to use the warp zone because you're a purist, and you're at world 4-2. Okay, sweet. We're on a pretty good roll. We're halfway there just about. Then, all of a sudden, your mom tells you, yo, we got to go to the store. You got to come with me. Now, you have two options here. One, you pause the game and pray nobody messes with it. Pray there's not like a strange blackout for some reason. Tornado doesn't take the house. Your little brother doesn't trip over the cords and accidentally unplug the Nintendo. Or, second option, you turn it off. And then you start all over again. That's not fun. Losing progress like that is never fun. That's why most of the time when I really sit down and I'm trying to make a good run in Super Mario Brothers, I'm trying to get there. Like, there's no breaks. There's no stopping in between. We are going to finish this game. Most of the time I don't. Sometimes I do, though. Haven't really had a good run since 2002. Just, the thumb's getting old. But The Legend of Zelda didn't have that problem. So The Legend of Zelda introduces the very first battery-assisted save system, allowing you to save your progress anywhere in the game. So think about it. You're a six-year-old kid. You're going through playing this game. And after a while, it dawns on you, I can't play this in a day. It's impossible. There's too many dungeons, and there's so much stuff to go find, and I don't even have the bombs yet. What am I going to do? And all of a sudden, it's bedtime now. 9 o'clock hits. Well, I can't just leave it on. The Nest will overheat, and eventually it will just melt. Mine did. It's a really sad day. The other option is you just turn it off. But you just spent 6 hours trudging through Hyrule, killing moblins and Staphos and everything else, trying to find your way to the Triforce, and now all of a sudden you gotta turn it off? No. That's madness. This is insanity that you speak. So what do? You hit start, you go to save, boop, you're good to go. Turn it off, next day you wake up, wham, adventure continues. So think about it, it's mind-blowing, man. It eventually gave birth to the save state as we know it now. Now granted, we had some iterations on it, memory cards, which eventually turned into, internal memory for saving data, such as like on the Xbox 360 or the PS3, even the Wii. Then you look at how we have it now with cloud-based saving, cloud-based game saves. Like now, you can really take your game anywhere if you want to. I mean, I know as far as Steam is concerned, if I went right now and I made sure I had everything backed up, I could go to anybody else's computer, anywhere else, log into my Steam account, and there's all my stuff. So think about it. We owe all that to Miyamoto. I mean, granted, there's a lot of technical stuff going on in the background. There's a lot of people that went into designing this, the cartridge itself. I'm pretty sure there was some engineer that got an award from Nintendo because he was like, we can just use a battery. And then, blows your mind. But really, when it comes down to it, Miyamoto's game sparks the idea for the save state. Man, words today. Anyway. But yeah. So really, when it comes down to it, next time you're going through your umpteenth run of Skyrim, and you decide to save and bed down for the night, just give a little nod to Miyamoto, man. Because that dude just saved you a bajillion hours. I mean, almost a bajillion. I mean, I've played Skyrim quite a bit. It's almost a bajillion. So Miyamoto also wanted the game to be non-linear in the sense that you didn't have the set order. So we talked about the open world aspect of you can go to any of the dungeons in any order. That's fine. But it was also set up to where you didn't have to finish the dungeon if you didn't want to. You could go in, get what you needed, and then come back out and then go somewhere else. So it's not the Super Mario Brothers style of like, here's your start point, get to the flagpole, and then the level's over. You had a lot more flexibility in the way you play. There's so much going on inside this game that people don't realize. Like, you kind of take it for granted, being of the most recent generation of gamers, because all this stuff is just, it's old hat. It's stuff that you've had since you started playing games. But when you go down and you break it down to where it all started, you're really looking at the father, if you will, of all these concepts that gave birth to some of the greatest games you've played. So really, a lot of that stuff is owed to the Legend of Zelda series. Innovation has to start somewhere. And this game, through its development and through the development of the series and the ideas and the constructs that came out of it, has given rise to mechanics and different formulae that have shaped video games as we know it. Legend of Zelda is probably one of the most important achievements in video games. And that's half the reason why I'm doing this show. I'm not trying to like wave my finger and be like, you need to appreciate this more, but it's trying to give you a sense of scope for the thing that you love to do, which is play games. So that's going to do it for the history portion of the Legend of Zelda series. Like I said, July is going to be dedicated to Legend of Zelda, mostly because the new game is going to be born. And it's going to be amazing. Now, you know where it started, and soon we'll dive much deeper into the lore, and it's going to get into the fun stuff. It's going to be really amazing. I cannot wait. Next episode, we're going to take a peek into the lore and the legend, the way Hyrule came around. We're going to start at Genesis. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. And so that's going to be it for this edition of Binary Gamer. If you have comments, suggestions, or you just want to have your emails read on the show, you can reach us at binarygamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's binarygamerpodcast@gmail.com. If you are watching this on YouTube, thanks. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. If you're listening to this on iTunes, thanks. Rate us, leave a comment, like, subscribe, tell your friends. And that's going to be it. So thanks again. Hope to see you really soon. Hope to see you back again. And that's it. I'm Tony Spears. This is Binary Gamer. And thanks for watching. Later days. We'll be right back.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.